And to this day, that's the biggest response on any record I've ever had in my DJ career. At least 15 people came to DJ booth like, what the hell is that? And it was just, I knew. But my hubris as a young man was like, well, everything I make is going to be the bomb. So I kind of shelved Whoomp, There It Is, and started playing all the other stuff.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only and represents the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Psych Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Bick, and I know you clicked on this episode because you want to hear from DC, the Brain Supreme, so I'm not going to keep you from that. I just want to quickly talk about last week and the OJ episode and something I posted on social media. So I posted a video about a take that I made about OJ on social media on TikTok. It got the most engagement that I think one of our videos have ever gotten. I didn't say that it had the most views because for some reason, some weird video I made when I was on a boat with water that had nothing to do with anything, just about a vacation, got most views, but it had the most engagement, the most likes, the most comments about OJ, which is not surprising. But I want to maintain something that I've said before, that one of the meanest places that you're ever going to find is a Costco parking lot in the middle of the day on a weekend day. It's just the meanest place you're ever going to find. Just people that are just unhappy in general, just angry. But the saddest and most aggressive and just the most unhappiest place on earth is the comment section of any social media site. And because that one post that I did last week had the most engagement that any post that I've made on any social media site had, that is something that I discovered. Not that I haven't known this by looking at other people's social media posts, but that it was discovered directed at me in my post. And I want to point out one particular comment because I found it funny, because it encompassed what happened in all of the comments, basically. Now, the post that I made about this OJ video is still up. You can go check it out. It was a 90-second clip of me making a point about what I think happened in the trial in general. And the first 20 or 30 seconds or so is just me making sort of a generalization about how whether or not OJ did it was sort of split along racial lines, or whether people thought he did it or not was split along racial lines. But in general, my whole point of the video was that I think that the issue in the OJ situation was more of a class issue, is that he got the verdict he needed because of the class he had. He had the money to get the verdict he needed. That was the point of the video. But if you only watch the first 20 or so seconds, you would never get to that point. You would only get the racial part of it at the beginning of it being split down racial lines. And so when you look at the statistics, because TikTok gives you statistics and insights on who watched it and how long they watched the video for, you'll find that the average user or the average watcher of that video watched the video for less than 19 seconds, and only about 8% actually got to the end of the video. So naturally, the comments are going to be only about the first 18 seconds. And that was encompassed by this particular user, Jen Molly 926, who very kindly said, and I quote, "Shut up. Everyone knows he did it. End of story." Well, thank you, Jen Molly 926. But that wasn't the point of the video at all. But I feel that it's necessary to respond to, at least initially in this podcast, to respond to most comments. And of course, because I'm a level-headed psychiatrist, mental health professional, I responded in the most empathetic and level-headed way by saying, thanks for trying to pay attention beyond the first 20 seconds of the video. Maybe next time you can do better when you take your meds. And, you know, I think she caught on to my empathy by responding, not a very good psych, now are you? And Jen Molly 926, I say,
well, bless your heart.
And thank you for the comment. DC Glenn, up next.
Welcome to the Bar Banter Podcast. I'm Travis Jennings, and along with my three hilarious friends, we debate and solve the questions that no one dares to ask. Questions like, what is the best Starburst flavor? Does the person in the middle seat get both armrests? And which Muppet would make the best assassin? If you're looking for a podcast that will make you laugh hysterically or scream in your car with rage, we have the show you didn't know you were irrationally passionate about. Join us for new episodes every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on the socials at @_barbanter. And remember, this is our podcast, and you're just along for the ride.
Party people!
Yeah, party people, make some noise. Tag team back again. DC in the house. Cecil DC, the Brain Supreme, behind the group Tag Team. Their iconic song dropped in 1993 and went platinum multiple times over. It has stayed in the mainstream rotation of music in many domains, not just in America, but in the world, especially in sports where it's just enormous and huge. My kids will not stop playing it. They love this song. In 2020, Geico parodied their song with this awesome Scoop There It Is commercial where you guys were scooping ice cream and were dancing, and that blew up, and you turned that commercial into real life ice cream. So let's start at the end and go backwards. Mm-hmm. After all the music success, you're an actor, you're a voiceover artist. How does it feel to also be now Ben and Jerry?
Hey, man. I'll take all of it, because all of it was tactical, strategic, and hard fought, right? And it's a testament to never giving up, always learning, always staying ahead, always being creative, and always creating opportunities, but in a different way. And because of that, 30 years later, I still stand before you doing shows and doing all the things that I know how to do. And I'm forever grateful. But I continue to hustle and just create opportunities for myself. And basically, I've made a 30-year career off of one song. So not too many people can do it. Everybody's path is different, right? So some people have a catalog of music where they have tons of albums and they can go on tour forever. And I've had to make a whole bunch with very little. So that's what it's all about. And that's what I'm good at. And that's what I'm here to talk about today.
Right. Well, I do want to ask you about, of course, the song and the career you made. But first, French Vanilla, Rocky Road, Chocolate Peanut Butter, Cookie Dough. Who came up with that? Was that you?
That was the writers of the Martin Agency, right? Because actually, okay, it was supposed to be Soup There It Is at first, right? So when they told me that, I was like, man, so I'm trying to find the Seinfeld episode of the Soup Nazi so I can get ideas, right? I wanted to, because I knew that I was going to use my acting skills and all the skills to be creative to make this, really add my mark to this commercial. But they came back and said, we're going to make it ice cream. Scoop, there it is. And I was like, wow. Because that just instantly transformed me back to my childhood where my father used to make us ice cream. And we had one of those old school, ice cream churns. And me and my brother would get it ready. We put the ice with the rock salt because we were from Denver. So if you live in any city that has snow, you've got rock salt. Mm-hmm. And You know, my father put the eggs and milk and, you know, he likes strawberries, but we like vanilla. Vanilla and, you know, sugar into the pot. And then he'd be like, all right, 20 minutes. Me and my brother are churning. And 20 minutes later, two kids eating ice cream out of a cylinder, just happy. And, you know, we only had to do that a couple times. Then we got an electric ice cream machine. But just that memory. And that's what made this commercial so special. So, you know, that was, there's several things that made this commercial special to me. So that's one of them. And they came up with the lyrics. When we first got the track, I was like, that's pretty good. You know, it's a crazy story. How they contacted us, my agent, in the middle of the pandemic, my agent calls me like, DC, for acting, you booked a Geico commercial. And I'm like, don't play with me, Lena. I haven't even auditioned for a Geico commercial because I'm an actor, right? I do commercials, all kind of stuff. She's like, no, DC, tag team. And I was like, oh, I'm like, how did that happen? So she was like, they called me. And I was like, I went back and I checked my phone, and there was a call from Geico, the Martin agency. But they didn't wait for me to call them back. They went to my IMDb and found my agent for acting and found all my information. See, the key to all this is to be able to be found. And the fact that I was able to be found, they called my agent. My agent makes the deal, and it's the most lucrative deal I've ever made in my life, even bigger than Whoop, There It Is.
Bigger than
All
tag team?
because, huh?
Bigger than tag team.
Bigger than tag team. Yeah,
I
bigger
mean,
than the
bigger than
original.
Whoop, There It Is.
Yeah.
How's that
Yeah.
possible?
It's not, because we was in a 20-year legal battle. We got some money
My
from it,
God.
but this was a lot more money, right? Because I
Wow.
don't know, you know, the music industry is terrible for paying people, right? So we were in a 20-year legal battle just trying to retain certain rights to the song. Because we were kids when we signed that contract, right? And that's what you go through. But, you know, at some point you gotta take responsibility being a grown ass man, you know, for your actions. And instead of becoming an old bitter rapper, I just vowed that it would never happen again. So I basically became a paralegal, right? And just fought for, you know, almost 20 years and prevailed in 2017, but at a cost, right? And we had the rights at the beginning, but due diligence, you know, my mistake on due diligence allowed somebody else to kind of finagle me out of those rights. So that was a mistake. And like I said, I'm not gonna, you know, I thought I could just spend a bunch of money and win a legal battle when I've got a little money, when I'm thinking it's a lot, and the record company's got long money. So they just bled me out. But I didn't give up. I was like, you know, I better figure out what they're talking about, what this case is about. So basically, I found out what emotion was, found out what discovery was. I had all the contracts. I had all, they used to give us everything, but I would send it to my mother because it was like we would be in LA at the record company, and they'd give us a big stack of papers. And I would just put it in a FedEx box, send it to my mother. Well, my mother had that in a trunk. She just put them in a big trunk. So I had all of it, digitized it. Now I've got all the discovery I need, right? Organize that discovery, learn what emotion was, come to find out that they tried to take it to trial. You know, you got the original record company and the new record company. And the original co record company went through 60 motions before they finally got a trial date. When they had a trial date, they prevailed in getting it back for themselves. But we had to get ours. So because I had discovery, now it was time for me to fight. Found a great lawyer in, you know, a great young lawyer in Palm Beach, and she ripped their mouth out for real. And because of that discovery, I had four or five ways to prevail. So all that hard work paid off, you know, the financial part of it. I said, you know what? I will never get taken advantage of financially. I end up becoming a licensed commodities broker.
Looking back on it now, do you ever regret kind of going into the music?
Never. I love music.
You grew up in Chicago and then you moved to Denver.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go into music as a profession?
It really starts with my parent. You know, every parent wants their kid to do piano lessons or play an instrument or do something musically.
Yeah, got
You
that
know,
right.
but that might not take. That's just something you do when you're a kid. But when I met Steve in 11th grade, Steve had a band in high school. And they would play in the quad sometimes. I just thought that was just dope. And I was like, I want to be in that band. And I ended up being in that band because of my Gifts of Persuasion, right? And the choir, Bolt Vibration Choir, Manual High School, 1983-84. Used to stand outside the door, listen to them play, sing music. And Dr. Joyce Davis caught me one day and made me come down, embarrassed me in front of the whole class, like, what you doing? I was like, I just like the music, Miss Davis. She's like, all right, going back, because I worked at the truancy office. But then after school, I said, Miss Davis, what I got to do to be in this band, meaning be in this choir? And she tried me out, and I was in the choir, right? And that year was my 11th grade year. I went to my first high school dance, and the first time I seen two turntables and a microphone and a DJ. And right then I knew. Right then I knew. I got just a rickety Sherwood turntable and got a Sherwood turntable, and I had a Technics turntable, and commenced to scratching all my dad's records up, right? But in the neighborhood used to laugh at me, and because I wouldn't play with them anymore, but I was downstairs practicing. And fast forward to college, I became a great DJ.
Like when you scratched up his records?
You know, he was mad, but, you know, some of those records were old anyway, so he wasn't like a record collector. And then, I ended up doing all the parties for the sororities and fraternities in college. Then started DJing at all the clubs in college, right? And got a name for myself. But at that time, the band disbanded, so therefore, I started rapping. I mean, started rapping, and I would write lyrics in class. And me and Steve were the only ones that, you know, kept together as far as the band was concerned. And my boy Johnny Z had got a four track our sophomore year for Christmas, and he didn't know how to use it. And I figured out how to make songs. And the first batch of songs I made, sent them to Steve because I went to Sac State in Sacramento. Steve thought I was in the devil worship because I was just using anything I could to make a song. Pots and pans, playing a little child flute, anything, right? Just cutting and scratching, yelling, screaming. But I made songs, you know what I mean? A little 3-minute, 4-minute song. And then he got a four track, and then we just started doing mixtapes back together. And then I started incorporating my DJing with my rapping. And then we started really having good songs that became popular. And I fast forward, moved to Atlanta and started working at a strip club called Magic City. And it's the biggest one in this, you know, one of the biggest iconic clubs in that city. And I ended up being a head DJ. 5 days in, now I get to play my songs at work. And fast forward 2 or 3 years, I'm learning how to navigate the land of Atlanta. I'm friends with Dominique, you know, Deion Sanders. That was back in the heyday of Atlanta when it was just growing. You know, Deion, it'd be Jermaine Dupri and all the new artists that were moving to Atlanta.
This is all from the strip club?
Huh?
This is all from the strip club?
This is all from that because it was the melting. It was the place that everybody went. It was the Cheers of Atlanta, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And so the Hawks will come in, all the Georgia Tech kids will come in, like everybody will come in because that's where everybody was, and they would all come to the DJ booth. So I knew everybody before I even came a star. And you know, all the record company reps back then, there was no internet. Record company records had to come and deliver you records and CDs. So I knew every record rep from every record company. So my relationships, building those relationships is what helped me.
Okay. So it's been 35 years now, right? Since 30, you did that?
90,
30?
I moved there in 90. I moved there in 89. Because the year I moved to Atlanta, that summer the summer of Spike Lee. Made Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing. So 35 years, right?
35 years,
So the statute of limitations is over on that. Tell us the craziest thing that's happened that you saw while you were there.
What, in the club?
Yeah, with the athletes.
Nothing really. Nothing really because...
There's got to be something.
Nah, man, because my thing was I love DJing, so I always had a front row seat to humanity, right?
Exactly.
I'm cool with it. I'm cool with everybody, right? So I don't get to see... And I only work when I work, right? So I heard about things, but I never really saw nothing too crazy because I was the one controlling the bus and I was the one driving the bus. So if you're talking about partying and dancing and having a good time.
But the kids in the back, While you were driving the bus, the kids in the back weren't misbehaving?
Because everybody respected how I played records, right? Everybody respected how I did my thing. So there was no disorderly conduct. There was no, you know, there was egos, pride and stuff like that. But it was never, you know, there's going to be a fight here and there, but not with the athletes. With the athletes, they come in and chill, or they go downstairs and talk to our owner, Magic, right? So I never really saw anything. And I did the strip clubs and the regular clubs. Like I would go to Dion's club. He had a club, Dion's Club 21. Dominique had a club called Dominique's, right? And then that's when the Braves were getting hot. You know what I'm saying? You know, Otis Nixon and Ron Gant and all that. I knew all those dudes. I still do know all those guys, right? But me being down south playing my music in the club, I realized that I'm in a different genre of music down here. Down here is the land of booty shake, bass music. Mm-hmm. And we're hip hop. You know what I mean? I grew up in Denver.
South, yeah.
I buy my records from, you know, I buy my records from 12 Inch Dance Records in Washington, D.C. So I got everything that came down the East Coast pipe. Plus, I would buy records from the West Coast. Plus, they had Tower Records everywhere. Remember Tower Records? Mm-hmm. That was the record store. So you got everything with Tower Records. And I was influenced by all kinds of music, but I understood that we had to come up with something up tempo. And that's how we made Woomp There It Is. It was just another song. People think it was this, you know, we really put in a lot of work to make each verse perfect and blah, blah, this and blah, blah. It was just a song we made, which pretty much everybody back then was just a song. And once we made the song, I think it was the summer of 92, finished it, got a cassette tape, went to work, I played it. And to this day, that's the biggest response on any record I've ever had in my DJ career. At least 15 people came to DJ booth like, what the hell is that? And it was just, I knew. But my hubris as a young man was like, well, everything I make is going to be the bomb. So I kind of shelved Woomp There It Is and started playing all the other stuff. But then one of the girls was like, why don't you play Woomp There It Is? And I was like, I'll play it. Same thing happened. But there was a record rep in the audience, Alan Cole from Columbia Records. He's like, what is that? I was like, that's my new record. He's like, give me that. I'm going to New York. Went to New York, gave it to Columbia Records. Now I'm getting called from Columbia Records. I said, this could work with every single label. Start giving to all the labels. Now I'm getting calls from all the labels, but they're not pulling the trigger. And they're like, well, we want to develop you and we want to do this and we want to do that. And it was just like, they didn't know what to do with it. And I was like, almost gave up. But a young lady named Lisa McCall told me to call a gentleman named Al Bell. Those who know Al Bell, he used to own Stax Records. Back then there was only three record companies, Philly International, Berry Gordy, Motown, and Stax Records, Isaac Hayes and Otis Redding and all those old artists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fast forward, he had a record company called Bellmark, and the year before he made a song called Daisy Dukes, and it was a bass record that went gold. So I was like, yeah, that'll work. Called him, took him about 2 weeks to call me back, and I thought he forgot about it. And he was like, Mr. Glenn, I was like, hey, man, this Mr. Bell? He's like, yeah. I was like, look, man, I got a hit record down here. It's proven. I mean, every time I play it, people go nuts. I said, you've got to sign us. And he's like, all right. I was like, man, you haven't even heard the record. Don't play with me. And he was like, I don't got to hear the record. I hear it in your spirit. I'll never forget those words. And he said, let's agree to agree. And I gave my 2 weeks at Magic City, signed a messed up record contract. And in a month and a half, tag team was platinum. The rest is history.
Well, I want to ask you about that because the song was very different than what was going on at the time. Because in 93... hip hop was dominated by gangster rap, mm-hmm. right? Snoop, Dre.
Actually, we were before that. We were just a little before Snoop. Before Snoop, it was Eazy-E.
No, the NWA. Chronic came out, right? The Chronic came out in what, 92?
Nah, Chronic came out in like 93.
I was in high school when Chronic came out.
End of 94. Oh, wait a minute.
No, so I was in high school when the Chronic came out.
Yeah, Chronic.
And Doggy Style came out when I was in high school. And I was in high school between 90 and 94.
Yeah, so like the tail end of 93. So right? Doggy Style came out first. Actually, when I was growing up, it was just Dr. Dre because he was with the World Class Wrecking Crew. They made bass records. We made up-tempo records because it's all up-tempo electronica music. Planet Rock, All Nafish, but then you got on the West Coast, Dr. Dre with Surgery. You got Egyptian Lover with Egypt. So everybody was making up-tempo music, even back then. That's a part of the history that people don't know, but I lived it. So then, and I went to school on the West Coast. So I knew all them cats because I would go down to LA and I would go to San Francisco. So I knew Too Short. I knew Hammer. I knew Hammer's. I got heard Hammer's got Hammer's record when it was on a white label. His biggest record, it was at the
That's
beginning.
Right. That's right. MC Hammer kind of was doing that stuff too, but he was overcome by all the gangster stuff that came out in the early 90s.
I mean, just
your song came out was completely different.
Yeah, everybody.
Except for like 2 Live Crew in the South.
Yeah,
which is where I grew up.
But that was
the same kind of music.
That was more of a, see, they got popular because of the whole Liberty thing of Luther Campbell getting sued, right?
That's right.
For Born in the USA and all that. So that's how they rose all over. But I've been hearing, you know, Throw That D and all them other records way before. Like when you're in the club, you hear all these records, right? But they haven't gone mainstream. So
I wasn't in the club.
But that contribution.
That's right.
So our contribution to the game was that Woomp There It Is was platinum in a month. And there were other Woomp There It Is. There's about 5 other Woomp There It Is records because it was a party.
Was my other question is Woomp There It Is by 95 South came out at around the same time.
Yeah.
They didn't get the same notoriety and they didn't take off like yours did. What do you think the difference was?
3 records before 4 hours that had Woomp There It Is in it. But it was like a party saying. So it's like somebody making throw your hands in the air, waving like just don't care. And everybody's like, that's a cool little saying. Let me make a record about it. And now you got 6 records that have the same title. So you still have that today, but it's more of a, like, it's lit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was a little catchphrase. So it's not like that's the title of the song, but everybody's saying that in their song. So it was a little different. Back then, those were the titles of the song. You had Woomp, Woomp. Woot, you know, Oops, Hoop, like all those different records, but they were from records from people in the Southeast because everybody's trying to capitalize. It just was a party saying, so it was the thing to do. But what we did, which was Al Bell's brilliance, because he knew records, he cut everybody off at the Southeast. He was like, you guys can fight over all those Woomp There records in the Southeast. We're going after everybody else. We're going after LA, Seattle, New York, because, you know, this is Seattle when grunge is starting to get big. This is, you know, this is Chicago. That's New York. This is DC. We had all the major markets. So we cut everybody off at the Southeast and still had the Southeast. So that's why we prevailed. But then what really did it, there's 2 things that did it. We were already hot, but Ed Lover's a good friend of mine. And he would come to the club whenever he come from New York, come down. So he heard Woomp There It Is one night, like the last couple of weeks I was working. And he was like, what is that? And I was like, that's my new record, dog. He's like, money, you got to give me that. And I gave him a cassette tape. He's like, man, I can't do no damn cassette tape. I need vinyl. Got to take this back up to Dre. So in about 3 weeks, I had got vinyl. We met down in Magic City. I gave him the vinyl. And then that Monday, he played Woomp There It Is the entire show, the instrumental. And they just talked over the whole show, right? And that's what they did. They played it the whole show on their segues, on their breaks. That's what that helped. That's everybody turned into Yo MTV Raps on MTV at 4:30, right? So now it's national. But this is at this time, the Bulls had won their 3rd championship. Now you got 500,000 people in Grant Park, and it's on WGN because the only 2 cable stations were WGN and TBS. That's why people love the Braves and the Cubs. And now I'm looking, sitting on my couch at 500,000 people chant Woomp There It Is because all the Bulls are on stage chanting Woomp There It Is. That did it too. And because of the
So you guys got into sports, basically.
Yeah, that's how I got into sports. And then everybody in Washington, D.C., because the first line is D.C.'s in the house, jump, jump, rejoice. They think that we're from D.C. So now D.C. is blowing it. So you have all these pockets all over simultaneously blowing the record up. And then it's just unrecognized crossing over. Then Z100, we started doing a bunch of stuff for Z100 in New York when the towers were still there. It was called the Gorilla Building, right? And that's where that's that long tower at the top. That was Z100, number one record company, number one in the country, you know. And then we started doing shows. Our 3rd show was with Tupac at like a summer jam in Los Angeles. But I knew Tupac because he came to the club. Right. I see him at the club on Friday because his mom lived down there. Right. So he was always in Atlanta. So I knew all these cats before. And it's crazy because now all these guys that I grew up with, all these guys that I was fans of, I'm touring with. And that's weird. But what's even weirder is that they're looking at me the same way. They're like, man, like Mark McGrath recently came up to me. He's like, dude, it's an honor to be on stage with you. I'm like, dude, you're Sugar Ray. What are you talking about? I'm like, nah, man. He said, I remember that was the time of my life when Whoop There It Is came out. And to be on stage with you is an honor. And I'm just truly glad to be here. And everybody tells me that, right? And that's what makes all this so special. You know what I mean? So I've had it good, but I'm not a person that I don't give up. So I don't care what you throw at me. You know, my parents taught me a long time ago that, especially my mother, she's just a part of life. She always says it's just a part of life. And to me, that means life is baked in the cake, right? It's how you respond. It's how you react. It's how you carry yourself. It's who you are, right? And today, everybody thinks somebody owes them something. Everybody thinks somebody's supposed to tell them something. Everybody wants everybody to care. And my motto is, ain't nobody gonna give you nothing. Ain't nobody's supposed to show you nothing. And don't nobody care, right? And once you realize that, you are truly free. Because I'm not looking for anybody to do anything for me. I will put in the work, right? And I know that to be the baseline for everything. So when somebody does help you, and when somebody does care, and when somebody does, you know it's genuine. Because I'm not expecting it, nor would I expect. I hate, you know, a lot of people say, well, they don't teach us that. It's like they're not supposed to teach you. Don't nobody owe you anything.
Did you ever worry, like, after Whoop There It Is came out, that you never get the success that song would get you again? Did you ever worry about being a one-hit wonder? Like, you never got another song.
I mean, it pissed me off back then it pissed me off for like maybe the first 4 years. But so here's my premise on, if somebody says I'm a one-hit wonder, well, I can take that and feel some type of way and take offense to that. But you got to ask yourself, what if they're right? What are you going to do about it? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the term one-hit wonder and make it a positive thing, right? Because as time goes on, being a one-hit wonder ain't the worst thing. If I'm still touring after 30 years and I've only got one hit, that says something. Because yeah, I don't know too many people that got one hit that still get to tour. I'm on 3 different tours, man. You see what I'm saying? It's about mm-hmm. how you maintain. That's why I had to learn SEO. That's why I had to learn digital marketing. So I could create my own relevance, right? I get to create my own relevance when I want with just a blog post. I could tell a story.
Okay. You mentioned all these people that you did concerts with. What's the coolest concert you ever did? The best one that you love, the one you remember the most?
London, England. Hippodrome, Leicester Square. We weren't even supposed to perform. It was CC Peniston that night. And we walked to this club called the Hippodrome. And they had fashioned it after Mad Max's Thunderdome. So it was like a club where it just went straight up, and then the dance floor is right down at the bottom. But you got like 3 stories going around. But they had a hydraulic platform that came out of the ground. And I was like, where's the program director? Because it was a radio station event. I went to the program director. I said, hey, man, can we perform? Because we just got to go get our DAT. Because back then it was called digital audio tape that we used for our show. I got to go get the DAT from the hotel. Got in a little London little cab and went back to the hotel, got the DAT, came back. And they were like kind of blown. They weren't telling them that it was us, but they took us downstairs. We got on the platform and they were like, we got a special guest for you before CC comes on. And without further ado, and they were like, tag team. And everybody's like, what? Who? What? Wait a minute. And when I came out and that music started and I said, party people, that is the most energy I've ever felt in my life. It was almost like I was electrocuted. And that is the biggest proud response I've ever heard on that record as far as yelling and screaming, and that is number one to this day. And I'll never forget that because it was that incredible, and people rock so hard to that song. And it's like that all the time because everybody, it's just energy. That song, memories equal energy, right? And everybody has a great memory from that song. And even if they were going through a bad time, when that song is, you could be going through the worst time of your life, but if the right song comes on, it just takes you out of it. That's what music does for people. It's therapy, mm-hmm. right? And I hear stories every single day. Yeah, we did. That was my high school routine. That was my baby's first words. That was this, that was that. And I am lucky and blessed, so I don't complain, you know? And I'm just different, man. I, you know, over the years I have learned the easiest way. I've learned, to me, these are the things that I teach. Like, I give what I want first, right? And I always hustle. I plant seeds, you know, and people, if you put yourself in a position where you think people owe you stuff, government owe me this and the government should do this and they're not doing this. And I'm like, you waiting for the government, you're going to be sitting there waiting for the government. For real. Because that's not going to, I tell people, when government makes laws, somebody campaigned for those laws. Somebody agreed some pawns for those laws. So you need to figure out who it is that law serves and then adjust your business according to that law so you can get the benefits from that law. When I tell people that, it's like, yeah, that don't cost you anything. You just got to find out why they made the law, what they made the law of. Every year they change the tax code. So my people come back and tell me what they changed. So when I do my bookkeeping, I adjust accordingly because I do my own bookkeeping. I had to learn how to do my own bookkeeping because people weren't doing my bookkeeping right. But once I learned how to do my own bookkeeping, now I can be creative, right? Because it's all about numbers. It's all about what you spend your money on. If I have a business and I can spend all my money on business things, then those are write-offs. That's why corporations make so much money and everybody's mad. But people will sit back and be mad at people because they're rich because they don't have to pay no taxes. But I'm like, that's the system. That's what you voted for. You don't even know what you voted for. So that's, you know, not going into politics. But that's a great analogy because everybody that you hear when they interview people, they're like, well, he didn't do this for me and they suck because they're doing this. And I'm like, you guys expect all these people to make your lives better. When we live in the greatest country in America, it's up to you to make your life better. So when somebody else does what you should have been doing, you can't be mad at them for coming up. They hustled. They worked harder. They worked smarter. That's why I try to teach. And one of those ways it works for me is I just hustle. That's what the clubs taught me. I hustle. I'm going to have, you know, I used to sell mixtapes. I would cook plates. I would sell hand fans to the girls to keep them cool. One year, the air conditioner broke in the club and the club owner didn't want to pay for it. And everybody would just be in there hot. Well, I go around where the Indians are at and I go to the ice house and then I get dry ice and then fill up a cooler full of bomb pops and icicles and ice cream. So now I got a whole club eating ice cream to stay cool. I done made $500 before I even walked in the club. You see what I'm saying?
See, that you got this Geico commercial.
Exactly.
You had Scoop, there it is, before the Geico commercial.
Yeah, I basically had an ice cream truck inside a club, basically, right? Inside on a hot summer's day. Like all these things are these analogies are relevant. 2011, the world thought that Barack Obama, president of the United States, was in the Whoop, There It Is video. And it was L.A. Snow from the group Deuce, who we got a record company because, and they took one frame and he looked like exactly like Barack Obama when he was young. And it blew the world up. And we did press for 2 weeks, ABC, NBC, NBC, Jeannie Most, MSNBC, Stephen Colbert Show. We were stars again. And at the end of those 2 weeks, I was pissed because I didn't have no money in my pocket. And I vowed that that'll never happen again. I said, well, why? Well, you don't have a web presence. This is back in the MySpace days, right? No web presence, but this is when Instagram is starting. This is when all the social media is starting to pick up. And I vowed that that'll never happen again. And I learned search engine optimization, which is the ability to get in front of the people who can pay you. And fast forward to 2020, that's when Geico called me because I feel out, I am an SEO person. I had to disambiguate tag team from tag team wrestling. 5 years ago, you put in tag team, actually like almost 10 years ago, you type in tag team, it was all wrestling. You type in tag team today, it's all me. That's SEO. You know what I'm saying? And I had to learn that the hard way. I just finished a 10-week mastermind today for the second time. And I've learned so much more the second time around. Sometimes it takes, that's how I got good at acting. Acting was so hard for me. And these coaches are telling me the same thing. But I'll never forget this. I'm going to do it real quick. I was doing a scene and I was overacting. I was talking loud and everything. And my coach was like, DC, why are you talking loud? The person's right in front of you. And when you're on a set, you're going to have a microphone on. You can whisper. I was like, oh. Once I calmed down and started whispering and controlled my voice and was able to talk regular, this is how we talk when we talk to each other, right? that's when I became an actor. And I haven't looked back.
Now that you got all serious on me, I'm going to ask you that serious question I promised you. Mm-hmm. Presumably, you know, you've met all of these stars, especially the music stars. You've met Diddy before, I'm mm-hmm. guessing. What's your take on this situation that he's gotten himself into?
And me, Diddy, and Biggie were sitting outside and on my Benz at the Roxy in Atlanta. I'll never forget it. Like, me and Big was cool. I was cool with everybody because we grew up during that time. And everybody loved Won't There It Is. It's like, we got a pass. You know what I'm saying? So with the whole Diddy situation, man, you know, it happens. You know what I'm saying? You know, he's still innocent, but Diddy, man, Puffy was the party dude. He always partied, right? So I guess sometimes that partying gets out of hand and gets extreme. And I'm thinking, I'm like, you know what? Right now, what they call him, what he's doing is called sex trafficking, right? But back in the day, it was called tricking off, right? Everybody did it back in the day. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm going to pay these girls to come do this party, and then they're going to do whatever they do to get more money, right? But now that's called sex trafficking. You see what I'm saying? They've changed the terms of things that we used to do back in the day that they might not have been acceptable morally. And as long as nobody got hurt, it was all good, you know, but then they took it to a whole nother level because now you're putting pills and, you know, you roofing people. Roofing didn't come around to what, like 19 to like the 2000s. Like, I had never heard that term. You know what I mean? Putting drugs in people's drink. Well, Bill Cosby was doing it back in the day. So he was doing Quaaludes, right? But that's just a cop out to get people to do anything. I remember my drug experimentation days in Sac State. You know, I did acid, I did mushrooms, I did all that, but it was just to have fun in a party. So I understand how that happens, right? But now in 2024, you can take anything that you was acceptable back in the day, not acceptable, but just whatever we did back in the day, and now it's sacrilege. I look back on some of the things I did and I'm like, wow, I feel kind of guilty. When it was just a boy liking a girl, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, well, you know, if she's like, well, I don't know if I want to, but if you're persistent, then it's a negotiation, right? Now, back then it was a good negotiation, but now it is, you know, sexual assault. You know, even if the girl does agree, right? She can agree and come back and say, well, you know, he did assault me. So, I mean, it's just a different day and different age. How I feel about his situation, I don't really know enough about his situation to even know, because I never really was at those parties like that. I never see everybody's like, you know, you got to be in the Illuminati and all this other stuff that people talk about. But that never happened to me. Ain't nobody, everybody tried to have sex with me. Ain't no man ever tried to come to me that way. And I've been around all the producers and all the directors. It's how you carry yourself a little bit, right? And I know how to get out of them situations. So it's like, I have never ever wanted to be a star. So I can go and hang in those circles because a lot of times nobody even knows who I am until I tell them. That's how I get to live my life.
So you don't get you don't get recognized out on the street or anything like Never. That?
Even with the Geico commercial, I didn't get recognized because we had on masks. Everybody had on a mask. So if I'm on a plane, I got a mask on. We were the first groups to start touring after the pandemic. Nobody knew who we were because we all had masks on. Unless you went to Florida.
But now there's no masks and people still don't recognize
you. That commercial is over with. That commercial played for 2 years and that was it. It's 2024. It stopped in 2022. Right?
But even like in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Back then they would know who we are, but it wasn't that. It still wasn't that. Won't There It Is always been bigger than the group. The song has always been bigger than the group. You know what I'm saying? So that was cool. Now, all the artists know who I am, but the song has always been bigger. So the average person doesn't really know. That's why we really get to go do a lot of concerts, because that was the formula back in the day. You play the record on the radio. There were no videos. So the only way you could see who was singing that record, you had to go to the concert.
Right.
It's kind of the effect we have. You can look up videos, look up everything, but you still haven't seen us like you see everybody else. So now you get to come see us perform. And because I've been a DJ all my life, our show is basically a DJ set. It is energy like, because if my whole life is predicated on being a DJ, because if I can't keep the dance floor packed, and that's what it was back in the day, you had to have high school dances were high school dances. You went there to dance with people, to learn how to interact and be social with people. So if I don't keep that dance floor packed, I'm not a good DJ. And as I go along, I've learned how to control. This is the one thing I tell people, control your emotions, because it's how you react too. It's like, I have learned the ability to take any negative emotion, right? Loathing, fear, envy, you know, all those kind of sounded like Yoda. And I've learned to, you know, sequester my pride and kill my ego. And when you do that, your mind is truly open to every possibility that stands before you, right? I can take a negative and turn it into a positive. I'm never a victim, right? So that's how I survive, and that's how I thrive, and I keep educating myself. The more you educate yourself, I tell people all the time, go get help. I've been to psychiatrists, I've been to therapists. I got therapists now. I see them once every 3 months just to talk. Sometimes you need somebody to talk to that will just listen to what you say, but sometimes you got to listen. Now, I'm talking a good game right now, but I'm actually listening. I'm listening to how you're looking at me. I'm listening to how, you know, your responses. I'm looking at you how this thing is going, so I know how to react accordingly.
So I want to get you out on two things here.
Yeah.
What's the future hold now for you and the group? Because we haven't even talked about your partner, Steve Rowland.
Man, we brothers. So
what's the future hold for you and you guys?
I mean, he wants to be a 60-year-old rapper. And, you know, I support him in every way. Okay. Right? But
why not?
He loves music, right? So he's going to continue to make music, right? But me, dude, I'm trying to, like right now, I want to be a great actor. I got a bucket list of stuff. I want to go do a conservancy, you know, in Australia. I want to do one in Europe, right? I want to learn with the masters because I want to be a great actor, because I can do this till, you know, I start forgetting stuff and can't remember lines. I can continue to be a good actor, but then I'm great at SEO, so I can market my own thing. But now I'm putting together a course to sell that's going to be lucrative on how to fill out your IMDb. All the things I've accomplished, I don't look back on them as accomplishments. I look back on them as steps in a process that's going to get me to where I want to be, wherever it is. So the future for me, I feel like I'm brand new. Because if I'm not touring, I'm doing something else that's brand new. I am one of the ones that's on the forefront of AI, very intellectually sound on artificial intelligence. But I don't talk about it because people are scared of it. But I'm like, it is a tool. It has made me a better writer. It has made me a better marketer. It has made me better at everything. It's the new search engine. You wouldn't say that about Google, and you do Google every day. Use ChatGPT like Google, and you'll be surprised at the answers you get. I need 20 ideas on how to do this. I need 20 ideas on how not to be broke. Type in the obvious. Most of the stuff you've heard, but you're going to get two or three that you had never heard before. And that might be the one thing that changes your life. So that's why I tell people, I leave everybody with, join an organization, because organizations are filled, organization, society, or association, because they are filled with people who are just ecstatic about their field and about what they do and about their job. And they have been doing it 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and they can't wait to tell you what not to do and how to do it. That's why I go to every convention and I meet 100 new people, because I wear a Whoomp There It Is t-shirt wherever I go. And now everybody, that's when I turn it on. That's how I leverage who I am. And then people still don't think it's me. They just think it's a cool shirt. And I'm like, and I just-
So you have
like,
to convince people that you are who you are? How do you convince people that you are?
I never tell them. I know when to double dutch my way in, right? So if I'm having a conversation and we're talking and they've already loved me for my character and because of who I am already. But then if something comes up, I'm tired too. I just got off the road. And they're like, go off the road. Like, yeah. Back in the day, I made a song called Whoomp There It Is in the 90s. And, you know, we still tour. So I just came from a show to come here to be with you guys. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then they think about it. I'm like, wait a minute. You manage the group? No, I am tag team. And then that's the cherry on top, right? I already got them. But now they want to take a picture so they can be cool in front of their kids, right? You see what I'm saying? Like, that is, I know how to leverage people's humanity, because that my whole life has been a front row seat to humanity. If I'm in that DJ booth, I see everything. I see that guy trying to talk to the girl in the corner. I see those girls over there join the girl's birthday. I see, people that want to meet each other, ask each other to dance. I see people who drink all the time. I see all these things. And I know how humans work. And I get to read all of this too. So now Steve will ask me before we go on stage, like, what are we gonna do tonight? Like, I won't know till I see the crowd. So, maybe 10 minutes before when I see the crowd, if it's just electric and ecstatic, everything's just going beautiful. I know I was like, this is gonna be a good, we're gonna do this, 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 that, that. But if it's, the promoter didn't do what he's supposed to do, which is rare, there's only like 100 people out there. Well, I'm like, hey, dude, this is a practice show. We're gonna practice all the things that we wanted to practice. That way, that keeps us engaged and going 100%. I go harder on a show where there's nobody there when than there is when it's 10,000 people because I went hard. Those people appreciated that I came and gave them the show that they wanted to see. And it's just practice, right? So I try to turn everything into a positive experience. There is value in everything, right? If somebody's like, you guys suck, and I was like, okay, well, what if they're right? What am I going to do about it?
Why
Make a better
would
show.
anybody say that to you though?
No,
Like
but the,
why?
hey man, you'd be surprised because the people you love most hate on you the most, right? Not out of hate, but out of love. You know what I mean? Think about all the stuff all the stuff that I've gotten from my parents and people who didn't think that this was the right way because I spent money for you to go to college and not to be no damn rapper and all this and all that. We're very proud in the end because I accomplished something
Yeah,
very
I
few people on
bet.
this planet can accomplish. So that's not to say that I have to block all that out. Right? I don't listen to people. I listen to people, but I'm still gonna do my thing. Because if, when I say, what if they were right? What am I gonna do about it? Now, of course, they don't know what the hell they're talking about, and I ain't about to do nothing. But the fact that I made a formula for what if they were right, I get to put that in my pocket. And now I have that in my Rolodex of things. So when life throws something at you like that, I'm prepared. That's where the nuggets are. The nuggets are in the negativity. Always, but you got to open your mind to see that and not get in your emotions that somebody offended you. Can't be thin skin. I got a very thick skin. I'm a lizard, I promise you.
Fair. All right, I'm gonna get you out on this. My wife makes fun of me because when I was a kid, I did not know what dank meant in your song. But now I do. But I assume that you're a weed connoisseur.
No.
So no? Okay,
I
well then
was
this is
young.
gonna be
I hadn't smoked nothing in about 20 years, man.
Okay, well then this might be a little harder for you than I thought, but I have seven terms here for weed, some of which I have made up and they're not real. And I'm going to say them to you and I want you to tell me whether or not it is a real term, a real slang term for weed or not. It is a game show and we'll see. Okay, so let's play this game. Welcome to Weed There It Is or Weed There It Ain't. The first ever episode and probably the last ever episode that there will ever be of this stupid game show that I just made up. We're here with DC Glenn from Tag Team. All right. The first term is Bobo.
Nah, never heard that.
No, that is actually a real term. For
Probably.
weed. These are all official DEA. If it is a real term, it's official from the DEA, by the way. So yeah, that is actually a real term for weed. Okay. Janja.
I've heard of ganja, but not janja.
That's true. That is a term I made up.
Guy who
broccoli.
likes to smoke weed and his name is John.
I actually do too. Broccoli.
Yep. You say that back in the day.
That's true. That is actually a real term for weed. Climb.
Nope. Never heard of that.
No, that is actually an official DEA term for weed. Smokies.
Nope.
That's true. I made that one up. Although it does sound like a term for weed, though, right? Like, Yipo.
No, I've never heard of it, but it probably is. It's weird enough.
No, it's actually not a term for weed. I made that one up too. Pinner.
Yeah. That's what somebody that don't know how to roll joints roll a real tiny, tiny one.
Really? Is that what that really means?
Yeah, that's what a pinner is.
Oh,
Yep. A real skinny joint. Back when we rolled joints. Now
okay,
then it
yeah,
went
that
to
is
blunts.
actually a term for weed. I didn't
Yeah,
know
then it went to
that.
bongs and
Okay.
pipes and all that stuff. But
I
like, hey
didn't
man.
keep track of how many you got right or how many you got wrong, but yes, that was a term.
I got three wrong, I think. Yeah, three wrong.
Three. Okay, so you got more right than wrong, but
Yeah.
yes, I didn't know that. That's what pinner meant. Really tiny joints. All right. Well, that was great. That was the first and last ever time where I'm ever going to do that. But I appreciate you doing this,
Hey, man.
DC. Your story is fantastic. To be honest, I didn't expect this at all.
Hey, man, nobody does, right? And that's why I've been doing a lot of documentaries, do a lot of interviews, I do a lot of speaking because you have to be a great storyteller. And I can tell this story 100 different ways. I have different analogies, I have different, but that's why, podcasts are practice for me. Do I keep you engaged? Do I do all these things that tell a good story? And I'm glad that you, I just want to thank you for letting me come on here and just run my mouth and get better. Well, I appreciate
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you coming on here, and
you.
good luck to you, and hopefully you keep going. Maybe we'll have you back here.
Oh yeah, when I get this course and stuff done, when I get the next phase done, I'll definitely come back.
I appreciate it. Mental health tip of the daytime.
Day full of hiccups? Need a shake up? Listen up. It's the Psych Effect Podcast Mental Health Tip of the Day.
And today's mental health tip of the day is brought to you by nobody. Still nobody. Maybe I should have asked DC if he could sponsor it, like tag team, or he could get Geico to sponsor it. I guess that's a missed opportunity, right? I guess. Oh, well, maybe the next time. Next time I'll ask him. But today's mental health tip of the day is framing. Framing. Think about it for a second. What did DC just talk about in this interview? He talked about how if he was called a one-hit wonder, right? But he could get pissed off about that, or he could take a look at it and say, well, yeah, maybe I was a one-hit wonder, but who could make a 30-year career out of being a one-hit wonder? He's still on tour. He still just got he got a Geico commercial 2 years ago that blew up. He got ice cream out of it. Look at all the things that he's doing. He's still working as an actor. He made an entire career out of that one hit. How many one-hit wonders can actually say that, right? So, and how many people actually have one hit, right? So would you take his career and his one hit? How many people would take one hit and not have anything? And how many people would take one hit and have his career out of it? So if people try to insult you with some kind of thing like that, take a look at the facts behind that and take a look at what's going on in your life and see if you can frame that. Now there's bad framing, right? And that's sort of like what news tries to do, where they create facts, like alternative facts, for instance, to try and make something look bad or look better than it is. But they're making things up. So that's not what I'm saying to do. What I'm saying to do is to take something that someone says that's trying to make you look negative and look at the actual facts surrounding it and think about it in your head to make it into a positive, just like DC does. Yeah, it's true. He had one hit, but he made an entire positive career out of that. Same way that you can do that. So framing is very important for mental health, because you can take something negative, take a look at the facts behind that, and realize that it's not negative at all. It's actually a very big positive, and it can turn something that will make you feel bad into something comforting and something that will make you feel good. All right. That's the show. I hope you enjoyed DC. I hope you enjoyed that interview. If you guys have any ideas about anyone else that I can try and invite, let me know. If you have any ideas about future directions or future shows, that I can do on topics, drop them into any of the social medias at Psych Effect Pod on Twitter, on Instagram. Feel free to tell me to shut up on TikTok. I'm good with that too. You know where to find me. Like, follow, subscribe. Please do review us. Me and Gratitude, I guess, on Apple and Spotify with written reviews. And I will see you in the next one. Thanks, everyone.
The previous podcast is for general informational purposes only and represented the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick and his guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.